good to see so many folks from the camp this morning. I know lots of folks are tired. I got to just kind of glean the grapes and go be just a part of, just a spectator, and enjoy all the work that others have done in the organization. And I want to thank those. I'll have some more to say about it in the future, but thank those who organized the family camp. And I want to talk a little bit at some point about what I consider to be the real value of that camp. And I really do appreciate those who put in so much hard work organizing it and bringing it off. Also, I want to thank Nathan for filling in this morning. I know he did a great job, as always, and also for Elton for filling in for the class. And it's always good to know that things are left in better hands when you're gone than they are when you're here. So I really do appreciate these guys, and on pretty short notice, filling in this morning. I want to continue, and I'm a little bit sad tonight because I thought that I could find the chart that we put up last time on the intertestamental period and put it back up, but for some reason we were not able to find it. And so if you have the chart, I would encourage you to pull it out so right here would still be the end of the Persian Empire. This would be the Greek Empire. And actually, the Greek will go on, will make a break right here with the naming of this person right here. But the two parts of Alexander's empire after he died that will impact Jews will be the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. The Seleucids will be the northern neighbor, the Ptolemies will be the southern neighbor. That will be Egypt and Syria. And meanwhile, back at the farm, you're going to have, as the Old Testament comes to a close, you had the first governor that was selected and put over the Jews that were left in Judea would begin to reign. And so you had a succession of governors right here that will be in Judea. And then you'll pick up right here, and the Jews will become, and their homeland will become, a battleground between the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. And for a while, Egypt will control them, and then for a while, Syria will, and they'll go back and forth. And so it'll be a battleground between those two. And then we come to this fellow about right here, whom many of you, most of you, have probably at least heard the name, Antiochus Epiphanes. Antiochus Epiphanes, everything was going along pretty well. Well, let me hold this story for just a minute and finish on that with the chart, and then we can. You'll have a period of time, there's going to be a big change we'll talk about right here, and you'll notice that all of a sudden you start having names of people right here. This will be the Maccabean period when Josephus talks about the Maccabean War. We'll pick that up and talk about that. And they will come down to right here, to Hyrcanus and Antigonus, right here. And then there will be another change, and we'll be into the Roman period of time. You'll recognize your history of Pompey, Julius Caesar and Crassus, the first triumvirate, and lots of history, Roman history at this point right here. And so Rome will become the world power, Augustus Caesar, and it will be during his life that Jesus Christ will be born, and you'll notice that we picked up a little New Testament right down here at the bottom. But you'll have the rulers over the Jews will become somebody that just came out of the clear blue, or at least it will appear that way. And they will be known as the Herods. They'll have different names. Herod will be a title for the ones who will rule over. So that kind of gives you at least a broad scope. And by the way, if you want to fill in, it's always interesting to me to fill in a few interesting little things. You've heard of the Rosetta Stone? The Rosetta Stone was right up there in 196 B.C. is when the Rosetta Stone was. You can see that in the British Museum today. That Rosetta Stone, just as a little aside here, was the means by which the ancient hieroglyphics code was broken. And you can still go to the British Museum and see that today. One other little interesting one, if you want to fill it in, right here between, 51 and 30, in here, is Cleopatra. Cleopatra will play an indirect role where Jewish history won't be direct, but indirect. So if you'd like to just put her. By the way, there were a number of Cleopatras. This particular Cleopatra was not truly Egyptian. In fact, she was one of the Ptolemy line. But anyway, you know something about Mark Antony and Cleopatra. And it was actually upon her death that the Romans took over Egypt at this time. So just a little secular history along with it. So if you'd like to talk to us more about this chart, then feel free to do that. Now let's go historically through this period of time, and you can be looking at the chart. I'll refer to a few things on the chart. From the time of Nehemiah, where we ended, where the Old Testament ends, the high priest became the most important person in Judaism. And Nehemiah chapter 12, verse 22 lists four high priests. And those high first Greek translation of a Hebrew Old Testament, and that took place in Alexandria, Egypt. And when the Old Testament was translated into Greek, it became available for practically the whole world to read and understand for the first time. Because prior to that time, unless you read Hebrew, then you weren't able to read the Old Testament. Later, it's going to be written in Koine Greek. And Koine Greek means common Greek, the common language. And like Latin, Koine Greek fell into disuse. And that's important because we can know that shortly after the translation took place into common Greek, Koine Greek, that the words that were used to translate the Hebrew into Greek still mean exactly the same thing that they did at that time. You see, languages are generally living things. I mean, our language, we could illustrate that words change meanings. I mean, sometimes they change meanings drastically, don't they? Words like gay, for instance, have taken on a completely different kind of meaning than they did just a few short years ago. And so when you have a living language, several hundred years pass, and you can't know for sure if that word means it meant back at that time what it means today. But once the language dies, it is not changed anymore. And so I'm pretty convinced that this was a part of, in the fullness of time, God sent forth His Son. That one of the things that God did is He had this translation done, and then He sealed it and put it in a language that wasn't going to change. Another effect was that along with the practically the rest of the world, the Jews were Hellenized. And the word Hellenized means to, just the common definition, means to become like the Greeks. The young Jews readily accepted Greek philosophy. That's going to affect the New Testament. It's going to affect the attitudes that were prevalent in the New Testament. They participated in the Greek games, and that brought about some real friction within Jewish community. The new concepts arose concerning the afterlife, which sowed the seed for Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the stage will now be set after, sometime after Alexander dies and his empire is divided. Sets the stage for Antiochus Epiphanes. And the Bible has withstood the test of man and time, and is still true that it has. Antiochus Epiphanes, and this will be the story of how, a little of the history of how the Jews came to be independent for a brief period of time, which they look back in their history, even during Jesus' time, as the high point of their history. And Antiochus Epiphanes was a Seleucid king, which means he was a Greek king who was over Syria. He was the son of Antiochus the Great. And as long as his sister, Cleopatra, held the reins, that's not Cleopatra Philadelphus number 5, the 5th, who was the Cleopatra, but his sister had the governmental reins in Egypt, then as long as she was there and he was there, there was peace between Syria and Egypt. But when she died, Antiochus Epiphanes decided that he wanted to try to combine those two portions of Alexander's empire, and he wanted to be the king. And so he made 3 trips into Egypt with his army. Each time he penetrated deeper and deeper and deeper into Egypt. And this 3rd time that he brought his army, he fully expected to capture the city to fall. Alexandria had become the capital of Egypt under the Ptolemies. He fully expected it to fall. And he brought his army to Alexandria to take the capital city. And again, we have a story that I don't know how historically accurate it is, but I like the story anyway. Something happened. And so history, at least some historians have recorded, that when he brought his army to the city, it was the very early morning hours, and it was the fall. And as he approached the city with his army, he saw something in the fog that he couldn't distinguish, that he wasn't expecting, and it was another large He forbade daily sacrifice. The city walls were destroyed. He burned the finest buildings. He required the Jews to offer swine on the altar every day. He forbade circumcision. He burned all the books, the Pentateuch, all the books of the law, and he punished with death anyone who was found possessing one of them. And there was a drunken orgy to the god Bacchus on the temple ground, and he forced the Jews that were present to participate in that. Now, if you go to Daniel chapter 11, verse 21, it talks about the vile person. It's talking about Antipathy. It talks about the abomination of desolation. It's talking about what Antipathy did. His name was Antipas Epiphanes. Epiphanes means the illustrious. The Jews gave him a nickname. They called him Antipas Epimenes. It means the madman. And so, thus became things changed for the Jews. And in his zealous determination to Hellenize the Jews, and that's the way he's going to bring his empire together, he's going to force these Jews like the Greeks and to do Greek things. his way through those men. He got up under the elephant, and evidently he knew something about elephant anatomy. And he took his sword, and he stuck the elephant straight into the heart. The problem is, he hit squarely in the heart, and he was under it. And the beast fell on him and killed him. Thus, Eliezer, the beast sticker. And that's how he died. And so now Simon, being the last brother, he dies. His son, John Hyrcanus, becomes the ruler of the Jews for 29 years. Independently, he prospered. He destroyed the Samaritan temple on Mount Gerizim. Remember last lesson we had? He forcefully proselyted the Edomites. He couldn't, his army was down to just practically nothing. And so he went to Edom. And he put a knife to their throats, and he said, either you're going to join my army or you're going to die right here. So they decided to join his army. Interestingly, those forced proselytes became the zealots of the New Testament. Really interesting history here, because they're not truly Jews, but yet they're the zealots. He besieged Samaria and destroyed it, thus intensifying the hatred between the Jews and the Samaritans. He aligned himself with the Sadducees, incurring the wrath of the Pharisees. Under John Hyrcanus' son, Alexander, we're historically introduced for the first time to crucifixion on the cross. He crucified 800 Pharisees because they refused to support him. When Pompey, and we're skipping ahead a little now, when Pompey came to Jerusalem to settle a quarrel between two brothers for the high priesthood, he found a shrewd Edomite as the leader of the Jewish army. You have to think about that a little bit. An Edomite as the leader of the Jewish army. His name was Antipater. Caesar, meanwhile, will take the throne from Pompey. Cassius took the throne from Julius Caesar, and Mark Antony appointed Antipater's son, Herod, who came to be known as the Great, as the King of the Jews. What a mess. Antony and Herod laid siege to the patriots at Jerusalem, and Jerusalem fell. He killed all the Sanhedrin, the three. He built the palace, Herod did, and a temple that in many ways surpassed Solomon's, Herod's temple. In his old age, he had his wife executed. He executed his mother-in-law. He executed two sons, all out of suspicion and jealousy. Old and diseased, he devised a scheme to compel national mourning when he died. He realized that nobody was going to cry at his funeral when he died because he was so hated. He knew it. And he realized that he was going to die soon because he had a disease that he knew that was going to take him, inevitably take his life. And so he devised this plan so that people would cry when he died. He took all the chief men and he left people that were well paid and instructed to do this, all the chief men of Jerusalem, and put them into one place, and when word came that he had died, they were to kill all of those people of Jews, so that there would be mourning upon his death. Now, amid these circumstances, as terrible as it has gotten, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born, King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east. They're talking to King Herod. We've come to worship. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people, chief priests, teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah. him and said, go and make a careful search for this child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go to worship. After they heard the king, they went on their way. The star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the